That's right. Say her name, Breonna Taylor. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. This is another show for historic times. The Nazi in the White House barrels ahead with his fascist program, telling the world about his plans to steal the pivotal election, now barely a month away. And less than a week ago, prosecutors in Louisville, Kentucky, announced the whitewash of the murder of Breonna Taylor, 65 years to the day after an all-white jury acquitted the men who murdered Emmett Till. This is America. Never forget that. At the back end of the show, we'll be hearing from Andy Z, co-initiator of Refuse Fascism, speaking at a Refuse Fascism meeting in Los Angeles on October 3rd. It begins. Before that, we'll hear Sansara Taylor, writer for RevCom.us and co-host of the Revolution Nothing Less show on the life of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the rush by the fascists to put an open Nazi in her seat on the Supreme Court. And opening the show up, I'll be speaking with Carl Dix, member of the Revolutionary Communist Party and a member of the editorial board of Refuse Fascism. We'll be talking about the whitewash of the murder of Breonna Taylor, the relentless and accelerating moves towards open fascism by Trump, and the need to take to the streets. And I'm really pleased to welcome to the show Carl Dix. Carl, welcome.
Thank you for having me on again, Michael.
Yeah, well, we got a packed agenda in front of us, and I want to get through this because it's one of the most important things, I think, that we can be talking about today. You know, I think it's one of the things that's actually people need to open up their eyes and they need to take some action around. So let's jump into this. The importance of Breonna Taylor. You know who Breonna Taylor is, right? But a lot of our listeners may not. So can you tell them who she is?
Okay, look, Breonna Taylor was a young black woman from Louisville, Kentucky, an EMT, emergency medical technician, who was studying to be a nurse. And in March, in the middle of March, police came to her apartment after midnight with a warrant, executing a warrant to search it, broke down the door, stormed in. Her boyfriend, who was in the apartment with her, woke up and thought that there were robbers breaking in. He grabbed his gun, a legal gun, and fired at them. And then these three cops fired 20-some shots, six of them into Breonna Taylor's body, and she died on the scene. These cops left her laying there for 20, 25 minutes before any attempt was made to look into, well, is there anything we can do medically here? And by then it was too late. This happened in March, and Breonna Taylor's boyfriend was arrested that night on charges of attempted murder because he wounded one of the cops who broke into the apartment. Nothing was done to the cops until, I mean, and people began to protest right away in Louisville, but it did not become a nationwide thing until after the murder of George Floyd. And Breonna Taylor became one of the recent victims of police murder whose name became known nationwide. Celebrities took up her case, and it became a huge deal. Then they decided they had to do something about this. They took the case before a grand jury, and the grand jury issued its report last week, and the Attorney General of Kentucky announced his findings and what charges he filed. Two of the murderers got no charges whatsoever. They were allowed to walk. One of the cops who carried out this raid and fired all these shots at Breonna Taylor did get a charge, or three counts actually, three counts of wanton endangerment. Now, the thing about this is that wanton endangerment actually was not about any of the shots that he fired into Breonna Taylor's body. It was about the shots that he fired into a neighbor's apartment, endangering the couple that was in that apartment and their child. So in a very ironic twist of things, the charge that came down, even though the focus of all this was serving a warrant on Breonna Taylor and killing her in the process of doing that, her name is not mentioned in the charging documents. So while you have people across the country talking about Breonna Taylor, say her name, Breonna Taylor, the state of Kentucky did not mention her name in coming out with these charges. And when questioned about that, the Kentucky Attorney General said, well, the cops acted legally in breaking into her apartment after midnight, firing 20 shots at her, six of them into her body, and killing her. The only crime was one of the cops fired wildly and endangered neighbors. So this is the story of Breonna Taylor, and it comes down to the state of Kentucky saying it was okay to murder this black woman, but you shouldn't have endangered her neighbors in the process of doing it. And the neighbors happened to be white. It was a multiracial housing development. So the cop got charges for endangering the white neighbors by firing shots into their apartment, but no charges for killing the black woman whose house they broke into after midnight, catching her asleep in her bed. I mean, and this is, I want to keep this PG for the radio. This is outrageous. It's a slap in the face and a punch to the gut.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, Carl. Because I think what you're saying is extremely important. I want people to understand that what happened to Breonna only busted out with such a huge heart because of the protesters themselves. And, you know, everything, like you said, everything had been hidden. You know, you had all these things like the legal works hiding the all the investigation they had done, everything else. And if it had been just up to the workings of the system, Breonna would have been somebody that nobody but her relatives knew of. And actually would have been buried under the dirt and just, that's it. But instead, you have this thing where there's a, you know, mountains of materials were collected up by the police and eventually surfaced. People found them. And the people who looked at them refused to keep quiet. And I think that's something very important for what we're looking at today in the world, here and in the world as well.
Well, there's even more than that to this case, because if this had been left to the workings of the system, not only would the cops have not faced any punishment whatsoever, no charges, they wouldn't even have been seriously investigated. Breonna Taylor's boyfriend would have remained facing charges because he was the first one to go to jail facing murder charges, attempted murder charges, and they were seriously trying to keep him on those charges. And then as this began to blow up in their face, they went to Breonna's previous boyfriend, someone that she hadn't been with for a year, who they were going after around drug charges, and they offered him a deal on his drug charges if he would testify that Breonna was part of his drug operation. And to his credit, he refused because it was a lie. But I mean, the system not only murdered her, but then as it began to be exposed how unjust and foul this was, they then began to work overtime to try to make it go away. And then when it comes down to it, even this investigation and grand jury proceeding was itself foul and outrageous, because many of the neighbors have been interviewed, they've spoken out, they've spoken in the press, and all of them except one say they heard no announcement of police. Only one of them says they heard that. But the attorney general said, well, the evidence showed that the police announced themselves, knocked loudly on the door, and only after there was no response did they break in, meaning they ignored the other 11 people, because there were a dozen people who said they witnessed this, and they didn't hear any of that stuff that the police say they did. So this was a very foul setup, and it is basically typical of the way in which this system, its brutal murdering police, and its criminal injustice system goes after black people, brutalizing and murdering them, entrapping them in the legal system, warehousing them in the prisons. And this kind of thing is really in the DNA of this system. And it has happened again and again, and it will continue to happen again and again, unless and until we get rid of this system. And the only way possible, and that's through an actual revolution. And look, that's why we in the Revolutionary Communist Party are building a movement for an actual revolution, one to overthrow this system and bring a totally different and far better system into being. And people need to go to the website revcom.us. We have got some initial coverage earlier on this case, and since the attorney general made his announcement, people need to check that out because this is what's needed. And that's very important. And there's more that's needed that I want to talk about in relation to that. But I wanted to hit that point right off the top.
All right. Well, let me ask you another question, and then we can, and just tell me when you want to get into the thing that you want to talk about, because, you know, I'll talk and talk and talk. But I think this is extremely important, man, because people look at what happened with her. And it took a while. I mean, a lot of people, most people in the country had no idea who she was or what happened to her or why, how it was done. And the whole nefarious way, as you pointed out, that things were done. You know, when people did learn about this, a lot of people refused to keep quiet. And it's very heavy to see that there were, you know, that there were so many other similar police killings of black people across the country as people began to talk about what was happening and what was going on. So you had thousands of people in Minneapolis, for instance, who took to the streets against the police and were met with brutality, but could not be stopped. And I thought that was really a significant development in all this.
Yeah, I mean, that was really very important. And when people took to the streets, and what really exploded it was the response to the murder of George Floyd, but then the Breonna Taylor murder became a part of what people took up, similar to the way that the Ahmaud Arbery murder by the racist vigilantes happened before George Floyd's murder, and people there were protesting, but then it became a nationwide story in the midst of the upsurge following George Floyd's murder. I mean, and it went to the level of there were players, professional basketball players, first in the women's league, the WNBA, who were wearing Breonna Taylor's name on their warm-up jerseys and on their tennis shoes and things like that, and speaking out around that. Then some of the male players took it up and it spread even farther. So this is what made this a big thing. But then you have this charging decision, which is basically a rejoinder to the Black Lives Matter protests that shook the country. And it was basically a slap in the face and a punch to the gut to remind people that Black lives really don't matter in this country. That's what this came down to. And people have to, I mean, as we speak, people have been in the streets here in New York for the past 2 days around it. And I'm pretty sure that's typical of around the country. I know it's typical of Louisville where the thing happened, but I think it's been happening around the country. And that's very, very important. And people need to stay in the street. And they also, as they stay in the street fighting for justice for Breonna, they also need to link this to and take up the demand, Trump, Pence out now. They need to do that because, look, a core part of the fascist program of this regime is the unpunished murder of black people. And frankly, the celebration of the brutal and murdering enforcers, the police around the country, you know, with things like Donald Trump going to Kenosha after Jacob Blake was shot in the back 7 times to congratulate the Kenosha Police Department on the fine work that they're doing and defending the white vigilante who murdered 2 of the protesters up there. You know, this is a key part of the program of this regime. And people need to realize that they are right and righteous to call for an end to police murder of black and brown people and an end to white supremacy. But achieving that goes right through driving the fascist Trump-Pence regime out. Because if this regime is able to maintain its hold on power, and they're showing that they're very determined to do that, your chances of ending white supremacy, ending murder by police, go way, way down if an open, virulent, naked white supremacist is able to hold on to power and consolidate that hold. Because the Attorney General, Barr, is talking about, can we bring sedition charges against the Black Lives Matter protesters? In other words, they want to suppress these protests, you know, stop them once and for all. And if they're able to hammer the final fascist nails into the coffin of basic rights in this country, they have a shot at achieving that aim. And that makes it urgent and necessary for us to say, no, that will not go down. Mm-hmm. And I got to speak some about the election that's coming up.
I was going to ask you that. Now, hang on just 1 second, though. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm talking with Carl Dix, member of the Revolutionary Communist Party and a member of the editorial board of Refuse Fascism. For me, what I found to be really concentrated in this whole story of what was done to Breonna and what's done to people, many unknown people across the country, as you were pointing out. And, you know, you feel like if you walk in any a small town, a big town, a medium town, you walk into a store and you're likely to find somebody that knows somebody or has had their own brutality brought down against them on their own. You know, you think about all this stuff, and especially if you're black, that's the whole point around, you know, a lot of what Trump was celebrating, you know, in terms of looking at this as the going up against black people and then going up against the people that support black people. You know, and basically you're looking at this, and I kept thinking, God, man, you know, this is a thing where the need for opposition, the need for courageous protesters, not just in Minneapolis, but everywhere, you know, and really right now, when you look at what's happening, when you look at what's being fought out on the big screen, you really are finding this thing that the struggle for the future is on fascism or we act on our conscience. That's what's getting sort of posed as those are the alternatives.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not a new thing for police to murder black people. It's not a new thing for police to get away with murdering black people. And like I said, it's righteous to stand up against that. But we have to see the context that this is going down in. And it's going down in a context of a fascist regime out to consolidate its hold on power. And if they're able to do that by hook or by crook, the ability to stand up, the ability to fight back against this could really get closed down. And we have to stop that from happening. And that means acting now on that. That means not waiting for the election and seeing whether Trump loses and what he does in response to it, because he's telling you right now what he's going to do in response to it. He's going to try to suppress the votes of people who might vote against him. He's trying to sabotage the elections. And he's saying, if I lose, then this must have been a rigged election, and I won't accept that result. I'll take it into court. I'll have my Second Amendment thugs, the white supremacist stormtroopers, who have been already unleashed against the protest, I'll unleash them to create chaos around this election. And some of his backers are even floating, having federal agents like the ones he sent to Portland to go seize the ballots from the mail-in voting to stop the vote counting process. So we have to act now, and that means taking up the call from Refuse Fascism for protests beginning on October 3rd that will go on day after day in cities across the country, growing in numbers. And there are meetings this coming weekend, Saturday or Sunday, in cities across the country, and I want to invite people to join us at those meetings, where we're going to envision this protest movement that begins on October 3rd and continues up to, and if necessary, through the elections, to envision and plan what this is going to look like and how we can make it happen. And the meeting in Los Angeles is going to be Saturday, and I believe it's the 26th of September at 3 p.m. in Pan Pacific Park. I mean, I'm going to be at the meeting in New York, but if you're in the LA area, be there, bring others with you, be a part of this, become an organizer for this, because this is what's needed. And people need to see the importance of taking an approach that doesn't pit fighting against police terror and white supremacy against fighting to drive this fascist regime out. Because like I said, achieving an end to white supremacy, an end to murder by police, goes right through driving out this regime and its cop-loving and police murder-celebrating head, Donald Trump. And it's the same thing if your issue is fighting for environmental justice, taking on attacks on LGBTQ people, attacks on women's rights, if you're really seeing an existential threat in Trump's attempt to rush to put another fascist on the Supreme Court, you are right. It is a huge threat, because for him, it's part of moving the way in which he's violating the norms and the laws of how the society works, moving to make that become the new law and order. in the way that the Nazis, after they took over and consolidated power, they made the things that they did, which were horrific crimes against humanity, legal under Nazi law. Well, that's what's happening here, and we got to stop that. And it begins by turning out for these meetings this coming weekend. The one in LA again is Saturday, September 26th at 3 o'clock in Pan Pacific Park, coming together with other people, planning this out. Where are we going to headquarter these protests? What's going to be the central site? How do we arrange feeder marches to come into that site on different days, bring in diverse groups with diverse demands that they link to the central demand of Trump, Pence out now? How do we fan out from there and go into different parts of town to reach out to people to sound the alarm and enlist them into it? What kind of cultural events that we do? And how do we deal with repression, both official and possibly unofficial, because that's going to be another part of the picture, because these people are threatening violence. Trump himself is threatening violence around the election, saying he doesn't foresee a peaceful transfer of power. Well, that does carry an implication of him unleashing his Second Amendment people against the protests. And we have to not allow ourselves to be intimidated while we also don't allow ourselves to be provoked by these different forces that are trying to stop anything that could challenge the consolidation of fascism.
Let me ask you this, Carl, because, and it's along those same lines, because people need to be clear. Look, there's no reconciliation with Nazis. There's no way you're going to sit down and say, okay, well, we can let you go, you know, on this thing and this thing here. If you're reconciled with Nazis, you're on your way to becoming a Nazi yourself, or being killed by Nazis. And this is a thing that people need to understand. They need to be clear. There's no reconciliation with Nazis, and the fascists are a different form of rule than we've had, and people need to be very clear and act accordingly around that. These rallying cries and a call to action. And I wanted to hear your thing. This will be about the last thing we can talk about, but I wanted to hear your sort of thinking on all that.
Yeah, this is an important point, because there are too many people who, I mean, I'm listening to TV and you have some of these Democratic Party operatives talking about appealing to the morality and the patriotism of our friends across the aisle, ignoring the fact that many of those people across the aisle are fascists, lapdogs of fascism, and conscious collaborators with the fascists. And appealing to them on the basis of morality is not going to get you very far. You have to actually have a plan to fight against them. And as Bob Avakian gets into in the series of three articles that are up on the website revcom.us, and I would encourage people to check out this series, the overall title is Voting is Not Enough. We have to take to the streets and stay in the streets demanding Trump, Pence out now. And in the first part of that three-part series, he talks about why the Democrats can't fight Trump and the fascists the way they need to be fought. And that's important to look at. You can't work out a compromise with them. You can't conciliate with them, because you conciliate with them and then you're on the road to joining them or capitulating to them, because they are determined to carry out the consolidation of a different form of rule, and one that would be a horror for humanity if it's allowed to be consolidated. And if you remain inactive in the face of this, waiting for the election and seeing what happens, then you're confronted with a situation where the fascists are mobilized, they're on the move and have the initiative, and you have to try to come from behind to do that when we need to be acting right now. On the other side of it, there are too many people who see the need to resist some of the horrors of the system, but don't see that there is a totally different and far worse form of rule looming over all of society and confronting us with that, and that this is coming up for resolution in the coming weeks, and don't see the need to fight that. And it's even come down on, well, Democrats, Republicans, they're all representatives of the capitalist system. Why do you want to choose between them? And we're not choosing between them. We're choosing to act to stop fascism. Mm-hmm. And we see an important secondary part of that, including people voting against Trump and for Biden, not as the main thing, not as the thing to rely on, but that it puts us in a better position to confront fascist consolidation if Trump indeed does lose the election and loses it significantly. But the main thing and the thing we have to rely on is mobilizing people in the streets, going from the thousands to the tens and hundreds of thousands and ultimately to the millions who are demanding Trump Pence out now, and who through doing that all across the country create the kind of political crisis that forces the authorities, including those in the ruling class, to figure out, well, what are we going to do about this? How do we deal with that? And they would want to come into it, co-opt it, and Avakian speaks to this again in the part three of the three-part series, try to channel it back into the system. But as it grows, and if we're able to continue to make it grow, then they actually become forced to work at getting dealing with this crisis by forcing the ouster of this regime. Mm-hmm. People really need to dig into this, because this is what we're up against. This is not some rhetoric on Trump's part that is not going to be followed through on. We have to be prepared for actual attempts to steal the election, to refuse to accept it. We are basically confronting a rolling fascist coup, and we have to recognize it as that and act against it. And acting against it means right now coming to these meetings this weekend. Again, in Los Angeles, it's Saturday, September 26th at 3 p.m. at Pan Pacific Park. And if you're not in Los Angeles, go to the website refusefascism.org and find out about the meeting that's going to be in your area. And again, go to the website revcom.us, dig into that series of articles by Bob Avakian, because I mean, Avakian is the person who has done the kind of work around fascism and understanding it, how it develops, what it looks like, the threat that it poses for humanity over a few decades now. And you really need to engage his work to understand what we're facing.
Mm-hmm. All right, Carl, we're going to have to wrap this up because we're running way past our time right now. Thank you very much, man. And we'll have you back again real soon, man.
All right. Well, thank you for having me on.
All right, Carl. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. That was Carl Dix, member of the Revolutionary Communist Party and a member of the editorial board of Refuse Fascism. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves, blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees.
That was Strange Fruit by Betty Levette. Now let's hear some Sarah Taylor on the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
On Friday, September 18th, Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. Ginsburg spent her life fighting for the legal equality of women. And when she joined the Supreme Court, she became a core member of the liberal bloc that defended the rights of women, especially to abortion and birth control, that expanded the rights of LGBTQ people, and that attempted to defend the rights of Black people to the vote. And when they were defeated in this, Ginsburg issued a scathing 35-page dissent. Ginsburg came to represent the hopes and aspirations of millions for gender equality, both for her decades of legal work, as well as for the way she herself had to face down ugly discrimination throughout her life. As just one example, one of her law professors, a man who later became the dean of Harvard Law School, gave her a raving recommendation to a judge who was looking to hire a law clerk. This professor wrote that Ginsburg had extraordinary self-possession and that her qualities of mind and person would make her most attractive as a law clerk. The judge, who had never hired a woman in his entire career, refused to even call Ginsburg in for an interview. And this was typical. Her death has been taken very hard by millions. Her death also means that there is an empty seat on the Supreme Court, a court that was split almost down the middle between the liberal bloc and a bloc of judges who are extreme conservatives or outright fascists. And now, if Trump is able to fill this seat, it will secure a fascist majority on the Supreme Court for decades to come. And Donald Trump is on a rampage to ram this through in record speed, and the Republicans are falling in lockstep. It would be nearly impossible to overstate the stakes of this battle now unfolding. If they are able to secure a fascist majority on the Supreme Court, this will be a major leap in refashioning the highest court in the land into an instrument of fascist atrocity. Stacking the court in this way would serve shredding environmental protections aimed at slowing the destruction of the air, the land, the oceans, at a time when the West is burning, the South is drowning, millions around the world are being turned into climate refugees, and the Earth itself is rapidly approaching an irreversible tipping point. Stacking the court in this way would mean massively expanding the power of the executive, that is Donald Trump, to carry out his white supremacist program of repression and terror against Black people, Muslims, Latinos, immigrants, and any and all who dare to stand up for those groups of people. Stacking the court in this way would serve completely dismantling the separation of church and state, turning the state itself into an instrument of fascist theocratic enforcement, stripping away the rights of LGBTQ people, assailing science, turning public schools into sites of religious indoctrination, and stripping from women the most basic protections of their right to control their own bodies and reproduction through the right to abortion and even birth control. And in this way, enslaving women, forcing them to have children against their will and reducing them to property of men. This and much more is the program they are deadly serious about carrying out, and a majority fascist Supreme Court will be a major leap in that direction. Again, for decades. But that's not all. Part of Trump's rush to lock in a Supreme Court appointment before the election is that he wants a fascist majority court before the votes are counted. Because a big part of Trump's plan to stay in power is to steal the election or to refuse to accept an electoral loss. He says it all the time. The only way he could lose, he says, is if the election is rigged. He's out there already stealing the election, and he is unleashing and preparing even greater levels of violence to stay in power, even if he loses. RefuseFascism.org and its call for people to take to the streets on October 3rd across this country and to come back in mass growing nonviolent protests every day after that, demanding Trump Pence out now. In their call, RefuseFascism.org has called what Donald Trump is doing a rolling coup. And they are right. And should we end up in a situation where the election is contested and thrown to the courts, these fascists want a majority on the courts to tip things in their favor. Ted Cruz said it openly. And just last weekend, Donald Trump did too.
Now we're counting on the federal court system to make it so that we can actually have an evening where we know who wins, okay? Not where the votes are going to be counted a week later or 2 weeks later.
Trump knows very well that most votes will not be counted yet on an election night, but many predictions suggest that he might be ahead in in-person voters and he might be behind in mail-in voters. We don't know how it's going to turn out, but right there he's telling people he wants courts that are an instrument of suppressing millions and millions and millions of votes. For all these reasons, Trump must not be allowed to fill this seat on the Supreme Court. It is very positive that people came out by the thousands to mourn Ginsburg's death. It is even more positive that in some places, especially San Francisco, among the LGBTQ community, people didn't just come out to mourn, but they came out to march and to express their determination to fight a new appointee. We need much, much more of this. And we need to fight against any ounce of passivity among those who see the stakes now unfolding. And let's be very clear. donating your money to the Democrats or to any of the organizations that are subordinate to and just appendages to the Democratic Party is not fighting this fascism. And neither is waiting for the elections. We need to be in the streets relentlessly with all the awareness of the lives and the future that is at stake. Even more fundamentally, the prospect in the very short term of a fascist majority Supreme Court underscores the urgency of the great historic imperative of our time, which is for millions of us from every walk of life and different backgrounds who does not want to see a fascist America to come together and answer the call put out by refusefascism.org to go into the streets throughout October in massive numbers in nonviolent protest again and again as long as it takes, demanding Trump Pence out now. The struggle against a confirmation of a fascist judge to the Supreme Court can and must serve this. It must be a rallying cry to many more to join this, and we must fight for that to be the case. We need to invite all those in who see the stakes now unfolding with this battle over the courts to bring their skills, their energy, their desire to fight, their refusal to accept a fascist future, to come and join us in the streets demanding Trump Pence out now. The future is on the line, and the stakes just went up enormously. We need to be all in this fight like the future depends on it.
That was Sansara Taylor, writer for RevCom.us and co-host of the Revolution Nothing Less show on the life and death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And you can find the Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube on the RevCom's channel. Now we'll hear from Andy Z, co-initiator of Refuse Fascism, speaking at a Refuse Fascism meeting in Los Angeles on October 3rd. It begins.
So I want to just start by saying this. Recognize this. Recognize this. How much it matters that you have come out today recognizing the emergency that we face, that humanity faces, from the Trump-Pence fascist regime and their determination to stay in power by any means and by all means. And recognize this, how much it matters that you have come out to brainstorm and to plan on how we can inspire, organize, and mobilize the one force that could actually stop this regime from doing what it's doing. And that force is all of you and all of us in our millions of people who represent and can draw from the hatred, the aching in the hearts of people all over this country for what this regime has done and for the 200,000 and for the thousands of people killed by the police in this country and the wars and the environment and everything else, the children in the camps and all of that. That's what you represent. And your recognition of that really matters. How much it matters that you have come out today recognizing that we have to start now. That these people are planning to subvert and steal this election requires that we start now, beginning our protests next weekend, and then day after day. That's not going to be easy. I'm so pleased to see 50, 60, 70 people here, but you know when we get out in the street, that's not going to seem like a lot at first. But we have to start. And if we don't, well, Chantel said before, it's going to be a disaster. How much it matters that you and that we have come together when so many others say, and they've counseled us, and they've argued with us to say, well, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see if he refuses to accept the absentee ballot. Let's wait and see if he refuses to leave. Then we can take to the streets. Well, we have seen and experienced enough with this Trump-Pence regime to know that that would be a disaster. He is going to do this. Name one thing he said he's going to do that he hasn't tried to do, and most of which he has succeeded in doing. It's not just Trump, as Chantel said. It's a whole fascist regime. These fascists are organized even into political movements, even a paramilitary movement coming out of the Christian fundamentalist Christian political movement. There are powerful forces in the ruling class that are behind this regime. They've purged many parts of the government, especially the security apparatuses of people who might, in fact, disagree with them and filled them with loyalists. And we should wait? I don't think so. These fascists are many and they are determined, but we are more. We are more than them. Their viciousness, they're using the Bible as a weapon against us. But what do we represent? Them with their Bible saying this represents plunder. We represent righteousness and justice. You have the interests of humanity. You have the interests, as Jolie just said, of the planet at heart. We have the potential and power of the people that we've seen in the streets in June and July and who've come out again in recent days in a spirit of defiance in response to the non-indictment of the police murderers of Breonna Taylor. And indeed, they have done so now, different than June and July, in the face of this law and order mantra from Trump and the actual killing of people by these fascist mobs. And this is a power that needs to be built upon. They've shown courage and they've shown conviction. And we're going to have to do no less, and we're going to have to involve them. If we combine the moral certitude and the power of the people in the streets that we have seen around the why Black Lives Matter and the fight for that, combined with that, with the moral certitude and conviction that this concentration camps on the border have to end, that women have to have the right to be people, to be human beings, and to not have their reproductive rights stolen from them, that this environment has to be sold. If we act with that moral certitude and then combine that with the millions of people who haven't been involved, but who, as the reggae singer Eddie Grant once said, deep in their hearts they abhor what is happening here, then we could succeed with this. And never forget, as we start this endeavor this month, in the face of everybody saying, wait, don't do that now, that we carry the interests of humanity. So I got a little more worked up in the beginning than I intended to. But I do want to welcome everybody for being here. We're going to work with each other and we're going to learn from each other. When problems come up or the going gets tough, as it will, we have each other. We have to rely on each other. We have to confide our fears and talk about where our courage is going to come from. When we grow frustrated with our family and our friends who just go about their lives as if the world isn't burning and people aren't being put in concentration camps, we'll come together and talk to each other. And from that, we'll get the fortitude to continue, because what we're doing has to be done because it's right. Remember, we're not doing this just for ourselves. I'm not sitting here for myself. We're doing this because it's in the interests of humanity. That's what this is about. That's why you're here. My second point is this. October 3rd, we begin. But why begin now? Why not wait till the election is over and see if Biden wins, and then if Trump tries to not count the votes, or if he says, I'm not going to leave, and then people will come out in the streets. Simply put, because that'll be too late. To wait is to invite Trump to intimidate and pervert the election every day from now until then. To wait is to say that the Trump-Pence regime is legitimate. It is not. Fascism is never legitimate. Slavery was never legitimate, even as it was the law and the founding principles of this country. Women having no right to vote, no right to control their reproduction, not even the right to have a credit card, all of that was legitimate for a long period of time. That didn't make it right to be lesbian, gay, bi, trans, queer. That wasn't legitimate until very recently. And all of that legitimacy could be wiped away. And if you don't believe it, come see me afterwards. We'll talk about fascism. Are we waiting to see if this regime can win an election by stealing it and then finding ourselves saying, well, what can we do? He won. You see, that's part of the danger of us not acting now. I'm going to get into that. And should we wait and see to follow the Democratic Party and the organizations that are controlled by the Democratic Party when they say we should act? This is a group that has played by a rule book that the Trump-Pence regime and the Republicans in Congress do not respect. They are changing the rules, and they're telling us to follow the rules. What do you think is going to happen if Trump steals the election? They're going to say, well, we've got to go where they're counting the votes. Well, we should file a suit here, hold a committee meeting here. If you're not in the streets already, this is going to be a disaster. And here's another thing. Do you think these fascists who are right now standing out here on Santa Monica Boulevard in Beverly Hills, about 200 of them. There's a bunch down in a town south of here in Orange County. They're all over the country. They came out to the Refuse Fascism meeting in big numbers in Philadelphia to try to intimidate us. Do you think they're not going to be out in their thousands on election eve if we're not already organized? This is to seed the ground that we don't even have then to, and it would also set the stage for the Democrats to concede and capitulate at that time. Without the kind of mass resistance, we are not going to be able to prevail, and that kind of resistance cannot be built overnight. If you think about it for more than 3 minutes, you will realize what it will take to build the kind of unity we need to actually defeat this regime. Stealing the election is going to require a lot of work, and all of you are here to be part of doing this. People do need to vote, and they need to deliver a resounding defeat to Trump in the election. But even for that to happen requires what we're preparing to do right here. Think about that. They are intimidating people. They are cowing people. He's ranting and raving. People are demoralized. There's articles every day in every paper in this country about this. We're going to be out there giving people hope and mobilizing the kind of campaign against the white supremacy, the xenophobia, the patriarchy that needs to be waged to save the environment. That should be inspiring people even to get out to the polls, even as it is absolutely true, as we have said since we started this campaign, if we simply rely on voting, it will be a disaster. But indeed, we do have to vote. And what we're doing will actually help that. My third point, I'm just going to say a few things about how we're going to do this, because that is a big question that this meeting was called for to answer. How are we going to do this together? So I'm just going to say a few things about this. And if a few means three, I'm going to do something that's three by three, okay? So that's nine things. It's inspire people with a vision of what humanity is capable of, and that we are fighting to remove this Trump-Pence regime in the interests of humanity. It is organize, people we know and people we don't know to be out in the streets. It is day after day until this regime is removed from power. We have to do grassroots organizing. What does grassroots mean? It means people like us, ordinary people organizing other ordinary people. It means going to your family. It means going to your friends. It means going to your people who you work with, go to school with. It means going to the congregation down the block, whether it's a temple or a synagogue or a mosque. Going out, ordinary people organizing ordinary people, and starting with the thousands of people who have been part of Refuse Fascism over the years. We just had a rally in Chicago. A professor who cited another professor who talked about a village in Germany, and this is very important. He talked about one town in Nazi Germany, and he said they didn't have one thing that maybe could have stopped this. They didn't have a coalition of the decent people. What does that mean, and what does it have to do with what we're doing? It means when we look out there and we see all these different social movements that need to come together, and there's divisions among us, nationality, gender, all these things that we're having to overcome. But it does mean that there's a lot of people, millions of people, more than the 40 million people who follow Trump, who really do want to live in a decent world. They aspire to that. We have to reach into that, and we have to say, for that world that you want to live in, you need to be out in the streets, but we have to organize them. A speech like this hopefully can inspire some people to do some things and help answer some questions. But it's no replacement for the hard work. And it is hard work. It takes time. This has to be tactile. Okay, yes, use social media. But feel the keys, okay? Feel the keys. And don't go touching people. Do the elbows and the... But you got to be with people. That's a big part of what's going to make this movement stand in opposition to... By when you look at it, then those fascist MAGA mobs out here that are just spitting venom at each other and at us. We're going to represent something different. That's what I really want you to understand and take from this. And to do this, to get those people out in the street, we need a broad movement. We do need to reach into the Black Lives Matter movement, the immigrants' rights movement, the environmental movement, the women's movement, the LGBTQ movement. And we have to say to all of them, what you are fighting for at this point in history is going to go through removing this regime from the White House. However hard you have been working to save the environment, to do any of this stuff, you are going to confront the fact that anything that has been won can be lost. Any struggle that has gained strength can be shut down. There's unfortunately too many examples from history that attest to this. Right after Hitler was named chancellor, in Germany, 100,000 people took to the streets and they fought for a while, but they didn't. For various reasons, we don't have time to go into here. They weren't able to rally the masses of German people, and a great disaster happened. And you don't have to go back to the 1930s. You can look more recently to Turkey and see how the struggle developed there. And you can see how that is what's happening here. Think about this. 1 month away from him stealing the election, we should have 10,000 people in a stadium right now and say, or out on a big football field. That's what's happening here. All of us together, planning, relying on each other. That's what we're going out to reverse. We also need to be involving people who have disproportionate influence in society, the influencers on the internet, athletes, people in entertainment industry, people who are legal people, law students to be doing legal work, people who can help us with medical care, churches who can provide sanctuary, bathrooms and water and all of this. We got to go out very, very broadly. But now I want to just get into one point which Chantel alluded to before. How are we going to actually do this? Because we'll do our grassroots organizing. We can grow to a few thousand people doing that. But how is this going to grow to the tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people? Well, here's how it's going to happen, most likely. Trump, quiet as it's kept, is going to do one outrage after another, probably three or four a day. If we're out in the streets every day, with this protest saying, we have one demand, Trump Pence out now, and we're speaking to those outrages and the new things he does every day, more and more people will be looking to what we're doing as opposed to what other people are doing. And we'll begin to say, you know what, I think they're right. He really is going to steal the election. He really is mobilizing these people. He really has stacked the courts, which he's just about to do in a very devastating way. They're going to see all of this. And then we become something that's thousands of people relatively on the margins of society, something that becomes right in the center of the debate. Just as you saw in June and July, where you saw Democratic politicians who hasn't ever said the word, white supremacy, it's white supremacy. Do you know there was slavery in this country? By the way, that statue was a slave owner. They never said that before. But people in their millions made that happen. And we can do no less, and we have to do much more to drive out this regime. And let me say this, being just a wee child at the time, the 1960s weren't always the 1960s. When people sat in the lunch counter, in one case there was nine of them, another case there was 12 or 13, I don't remember. Everybody took to the streets in their millions right after they did this and got beat up. No, there was a process that ensued. There were some people who were first. They acted on their convictions. They acted on their morality. They acted with courage. And then other people who supported them spread the word and fought with other people. I don't mean physically, I mean fought and came into synagogues and into churches and into mosques and said, what they did is right. Donate money, but get your own ass down there. And many students responded to that. White students, black students, all kinds of people went down and tried to help with voter registration drives and against the laws against segregation. We're starting small, and we have to grow within 1 month, but we have right on our side, and we have what they are doing, what the Trump-Pence regime is doing, and what other forces who we want to act are not doing, like the Democratic Party, in the way they should be doing. And I'm not talking about the people here who are a member of the Democratic Party or the people on the editorial board of Refuse Fascism who are Hillary volunteers. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about the people up top. Because I tell you what, if the Democratic Party mobilized masses of people, the streets would be filled because they have the resources to do that. Then the question would be, what is the demand? And the demand is Trump Pence out now. We are trying to get him out before the election. If you actually had millions of the people in the street right now, you have a shot at him being impeached or the wise heads of the Republicans and the Democrats going and said, you guys got to resign right now because we got a bigger problem on our hands than just you. So get out of here, and then we'll try to regroup. That's what will go on. That's what happened with Nixon. That could happen here as well. I'm just going to pay. I've taken some time, but I'm just trying to round a few things out. I just want to say a brief word about the vision of what we're going to be doing. We're starting at Highland and Hollywood, but then we're going to be moving to a central square. I don't know if that's been determined yet, but wherever it is, and in every city and in every town, in the valley or wherever, what we want to be doing is having a place where people can come every day in the beginning. They can find out what's going on, where there'll be programs going on, discussions going on, where people will be getting lots of materials and going out to neighborhoods, where we have marches that go from the central square out to the neighborhoods. Maybe in this town it would have to be car caravans, or get on the trains, get on the metro. And people will be marching to the town square. If we get some permits, we should be showing films and having discussions. Growing in numbers, the marches themselves becoming bigger and more determined as we begin to fill the streets, ultimately by the time we get into the month, of hundreds of thousands of people. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to start something. We're going to have to spread the word. It's not one march. It's a whole process that begins by going to that central square and making an impact on society with that and drawing more and more people in. Now, I just want to say to you that much of what I've said today is drawn from an article that's called Trump's Fascism More Blatant and Dangerous Every Day, How a Determined Fight and Massive Mobilization Could Defeat This by Bob Avakian. The editorial board of Refuse Fascism has read this and thought it's an important thing that we're going to put up on the Refuse Fascism site. We recommend that you all read this. I'm going to end with this, which is from our call, the Refuse Fascism's call. You should have that with you. But really think about this. We will act on our principles, modeling the world we aspire to in contrast to the hatred and the bigotry of this fascist regime. We will act together with creative joy and with the conviction and courage of standing together, not only for ourselves, but for all of humanity. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. So thank you.
We've been listening to Andy Z, co-initiator of Refuse Fascism, speaking at a Refuse Fascism meeting in Los Angeles on October 3rd. Once again, it begins. And that brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to share your thoughts and ideas about the show, or if you want to volunteer to be part of the show, write to me at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com.